Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Creator Spotlight here on the Spotlight here on Fightful.com. I'm still Jeremy Lambert. That is still Steven Jensen. And we are joined today by media personality who works for blank, 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 and blank. It's Ella J. How you doing?
I did tell him to say that, so it works. I'm great. How are you guys today?
Doing well. Yes, I was going to list off the 500 websites you work for, and you're like, we'll be here all day. Just say blank, blank, blank. I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. So can't ask me to do these things. I will 100% do that. Okay. Ella, first question, just how did you get started in the wrestling media space?
Yeah, so it was not by like accident. It was just kind of on a whim because my degree is totally unrelated. I graduated with my bachelor's degree in psychology and minored in creative writing, was set to go to grad school, enrolled in everything for a second to go for my master's. But then I was like, I don't really know if this is exactly what I want to do because that's more debt and you get even less aid in grad school. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll take a break, maybe a semester or a year off while working the same shoot job that I just left a couple years that I just left recently. So I was there for like 6.5 years. I was like, I'm just going to work, you know, and like I was part of the wrestling community at that time, but I was like, I'll have so much free time like outside of work now. And I had seen like you guys have had my good friend Samira on here before. Mm-hmm. She was killing it and doing like interviews in that time. And also people like Chris Van Fleet and Alicia too were into like podcasting and interviewing. I was like, you know, I love wrestling. I've been part of the wrestling Twitter community for a couple years now. And I was like, I love talking about it. It's not something I get to talk about really in person. I was really a closeted fan in like high school and middle school, to be honest with you. So like Twitter was like finally the place where I could talk about it. I was like, I'm going to start my own podcast, you know, and then A Wrestling Gal was born and it's kind of evolved from there.
Yeah, very relatable. I'm sure there's a lot of people, ourselves included, and people listening to this right now, closeted wrestling fans growing up most of their lives. Probably even more difficult for women, to be honest, like because like it's even less likely yeah. you'd be into wrestling. You know, and then I'm big on education and everything. I know you said that you kind of pass up a master's degree, it sounds like, to start, you know, kind of getting the ball rolling. I have a bachelor's degree. I don't think that like it's one of those things like necessarily. It depends on what you want to go into, right? And I think that I was listening to an interview recently that I thought was really interesting. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Carl Jacobs. He's in like the Mr. Beast videos and
yeah,
the big
yeah,
Minecraft
with the streamers. Yeah, I watch Carl. Yeah, and that whole group. Yeah,
yeah. So Carl, I've heard him in interviews before talking about how basically like he was going to college and trying to become a video editor. And he was going to school for editing. And then, like, the opportunity arose to become Mr. Beast's brother's YouTube editor, which eventually evolved into him, like, becoming a part of the main. My whole point with this, though, is he basically was offered the dream job while he was in school. And he was like, okay, I could either stay in school and keep learning how to edit and then hopefully get offered a job close to this good afterwards, or just drop out of school right now and just go do the job. And like, you know what I mean? So I just think that's something that's worth bringing up as well, where it's like your plans can change. Like if you wanted to get a master's degree, you wanted to get this, you wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. But like a good opportunity comes up, like you might want to try it, you know, because you never kind of know what might come out of that.
Yeah, this frankly started out as a hobby for me just with my podcast going forward. I didn't intend this to kind of create even possibly like a career path for me. It just started, I was like, I'm going to be like off for the next year. Maybe if I decide to go to grad school or not, I might as well do something fun that I enjoy doing. And then obviously it's evolved since then. And I mean, it has nothing to do with my bachelor's, but I don't regret my time in college. But like you said, sometimes plans change.
How did you get involved with the Gawcast? For people who don't know, the Gawcast Grown Ass Women podcast with Mickey James, Victoria, SoCal Val. How did your involvement in that come about?
So Mickey had known me for a couple of years before that through social media. And ironically, yesterday was the 5-year anniversary of when we first met in person. And like, I would see her at her music events and like the local shows here. And we became like friendly on social media and stuff. She knew who I was. And so then they started up Gaw TV. I was like, of course, I'm going to support this. This is in like May of 2020. She was familiar that I was doing my own podcast and stuff. And then I interviewed her myself at one point. And then later on that year in November, she's like, hey, like, I want to like do something for you. You obviously like have a passion for you. Like, how would you feel about like helping us with our like launching our podcast initially? So before she even got there, she knew she pitched me to help her in some way, whether it was with social media or stuff, because frankly, I've made a couple of TikToks for her. A good portion of her TikTok content is because of me. So I was helping her with social media. And then I was like, I don't know. And then she had the idea of like helping them launch their podcast. And so now I exclusively edit their podcast and put that out on the audio platforms and all of that for them after it's gone out on YouTube. About a week later, goes out on the audio platforms like Spotify, Anchor, and Stitcher and all of that. So that it kind of just naturally progressed from there. And then obviously now I'm good friends with Lisa and Val too, I think.
You said that started around May of 2020.
Yeah, that's when they started Gaw TV. And then they later that year they started like their podcast, and then that officially started in January of 2021. So last year.
So with the what do you know if like the pandemic was kind of like a part that a big reason why they started doing it, because that timing is like right when
absolutely it really was the time that they started that. And they've said that before, they were just kind of at home, you know, they were good friends who were like, we want to do something, and you know, there was the influx of people coming out with podcasts during that time. That was definitely a big factor in it.
I love the Gawcast. If anybody has not checked it out, what are you doing? But those three are great, and they just like sit around and they drink wine. Like, who are you wearing this week? Like, what are you drinking this week? It is very just like laid back girls chat, and they get into wrestling and everything. And I know that like after Mickey had got released, like that was a huge episode. I remember that was like appointment viewing after that, because she went into detail with everything. So if you have not checked out the Gawcast, please do that. What are you involved with now? Because I know you made the announcement a couple weeks ago of like, I'm doing now wrestling full time. So how did it all work out to where now this is your 100% career?
So I'd been literally like manifesting going full time in the universe for like almost 2 years now, but it was that fear of, you know, I don't want to jump into this unless I have two things, and that's consistency and financial stability. And so I was working my shoot job, which was retail combined with all the other stuff I was doing with like WrestleZone, SE Scoops, Capital Championship Wrestling, yada, yada, goes on and on. I was like, I really want to do this full time because I've missed out on some opportunities and some more more work in wrestling because I was laid down by my shoot job. But that kind of like was my safety net for a bit. So I was like, if I can find like something that can give me about the same amount of hours and kind of act as that safety net in place of my shoot job, but in wrestling, then like I'm gonna go for it. And plus my schedule was changing each week, because if you work retail, your schedule doesn't stay consistent. So that was always hard, going week to week. I was like, oh, I need to let you know if I can do this once I get my schedule. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of getting sick of doing that. So it was actually, I had been searching for like something on like I found it on Indeed. I didn't even see that they announced it on Twitter with Wrestling Inc. I was like just typing in wrestling on Indeed, and then it came up like wrestling news writer. I'm like, what's this? And then I saw it, And then I like read it. It's freelance work. It's basically what I was doing now with SE Scoops and WrestleZone. But you can choose your own set of hours, and the pay was pretty good, to be honest. And so I was like, let me update my resume to reflect my updated work and that. And so I applied, went through the whole onboarding process, the trial shift, and then they accepted me. And so now that's kind of taking the place of my shoot job, about the same amount of hours and days. And so that for me right now is like, I'm excited to do it. But that for me was really the catalyst that made me feel confident enough to expand my role more in the other stuff that I was doing, but also now start wrestling full time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time, if that makes sense.
For sure. So when it comes to all the different roles you fulfill, anything you enjoy kind of more than the other? Because I've done news for years, and I've always said like this show, podcasting, like that's my break from news writing, because I'm very deep into the news writing game. Like I just love doing shows. Anything that, like, oh, the news writing, really, that's the thrill for me. The podcast, the hosting, like what's the thrill for you when it comes to wrestling?
You know, it's funny because the news writing is like, I don't know if it's like 70, I would say it's like 60% of my like current schedule now going forward. However, interviewing is honestly my favorite thing. It's what I've done on my podcast. It just, frankly though, it's not enough to like fill your whole plate and get paid and survive off of that. But interviewing is my favorite thing. And maybe that's the psychology major in me, is connecting with people and getting to know their stories beyond, I mean, in and outside of wrestling. For me, that's my favorite thing, is doing my research on people and finding cool facts or cool stuff about them, or sometimes talking about deeper stuff that they might have not opened up about before. For me, it's connecting with people, and for me that's like my favorite thing, whether it's virtual or in person, is interviewing. So I hope I'll be doing that a little bit more with a couple of the expanded roles I'll be taking on for like WrestleZone and SE Scoops, but I love interviewing, kind of like how we're doing here today.
Do you have well, actually, two questions. First one, if you remember, if you have like a vivid like recollection of like the first time you interviewed a wrestler, like what that experience was like and who it was. And then also if you could follow up afterwards with just like if you have a couple like favorite interviews. Obviously, like it's cool to be able to get anyone we can get. Like I don't like to rank my favorite people we've had on the show or anything like that. But if you have a couple like special interviews that come to mind, I'd like to hear about those as well.
Yeah, so the first wrestler I interviewed was, she was ROH Women's Champion at the time, who I was good friends with, who was Kelly Klein before all that stuff happened with her. And so I kind of started out, went and leaned on people I was comfortable with, like Samira. I knew Alicia too, Kelly Klein, I was pretty good friends with too. So I kind of leaned on people that I knew out starting out. And so like, I remember that, and she gave me feedback afterwards. I tried to like, there was some bit more basic like general questions in there, but it was my first time interviewing a wrestler, and so she gave me good feedback. She's like, you had a good mix of like general questions, you know, that were like relevant, but also some deeper questions that also like made her feel comfortable and like opened the box a little bit more. So she gave me some good feedback that day. I remember that. And so from then going forward, I tried to shy a little bit away from those like cliche questions, unless God forbid it's somebody's first interview, which I think I've been somebody's first interview like on about a dozen occasions now. So unless it's their first interview or I can't find any content on them, I really try not to lean on those cliche basic wrestling questions. But in terms of my favorites, I mean, I feel like it has to be Deonna Purrazzo. I've interviewed her like 8 times now. And honestly, I feel like my favorite one, though, was the first one after she just got released from NXT. And she was doing this VA tour thing going on. But I felt like we had a cool conversation because she had been coming from a place where she had been pitching herself. And she had been pitching herself to NXT and really had just been released and requested that. And she was kind of in this weird, like, purgatory with stuff. And so we were talking about not only advocating for yourself, but advocating for others and knowing your worth and deeper topics like that. And so I was just really blown away from her. And then obviously we've built a good rapport since then. And it's always fun interviewing her. And I feel like, obviously, I mean, my girl Mickie James is always fun, but in terms of like indie stuff, I would say Becca from the Boston area was really fun because she has a lot of cool stuff about her that like people don't know. Like she was in a band, she collects vinyl, she has so many cool things about her. I think that was the most like genuinely fun conversation I've had, where most like 90% of the interview was not even wrestling.
Any dream interviews that you have? Like I gotta at some point in my career get this person.
Yeah, so I have like two that I've been really kind of trying to manifest that I doubt will ever happen. One is Jamie Hayter that I've literally been manifesting for over 3 years now. She was actually part of the first ever, it sounds stupid to say, but the first ever indie match that I ever watched actually was her versus Britt Baker in Pro Wrestling Eve before they went to the whole AEW stuff. And so she's one that I've been a fan of since before I even started my podcast. And King Kota, Dakota Kai is also one I've been trying to manifest. However, I doubt that those two will ever happen since they're both signed to major companies, but never say never in pro wrestling.
Who are yours, Jeremy? Danielson?
Oh yeah. Sure, probably like Danielson. That'd be great. Yeah. I do want to ask about the Tony Khan incident. I don't remember the exact media call, but you would ask the question about NWA Empower and women's wrestling, and Tony just like cut you off with it and then went on his big rant that he went on. And you said afterwards, like, just talk to Tony. He was apologetic and everything is fine. But in that moment, like, what are you feeling when he just kind of cuts in and starts being Tony Khan?
Well, I just want to note, this is kind of my first time like publicly talking about it.
Oh,
So thanks for putting me on the spot, Jeremy. Awesome. It's fine.
Awesome. I figured you would ask about this before.
I have not talked about it before, but you know, it's been about a year now. I just remember being like, it's the same feeling that I get when I'm like public speaking. It sounds terrible to say as like a media personality, but like my chest feels like it's like swelling up. And I just remember like being in shock. Like couldn't really register what was happening. And then at the end, when he was like, does that make sense? I'm just like, okay. And I didn't really know what was happening. It was all happening so fast. And then I'm getting DMs, tweets, like as this whole thing is happening right now. And at first I was just kind of in shock. I couldn't process what had really happened. And then when it's the mentions and all that stuff kind of started flooding in, and then later getting, you know, death threats and mean tweets about it, you know, it was like, I didn't want this. I wasn't even supposed to be on that media call, because I was supposed to have an interview at that time during that media call. But earlier in the day, the girl messaged me, was like, hey, can we move it back an hour? And so I was like, I guess I'll go on the media call now. So I was almost not even on that media call, which is the craziest thing of it all. But I just remember being so in shock and like, I'm like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And I don't know, it was foreign territory to me. And I think I handled it pretty well, to be honest. But it's still something that like still sticks with me, and that I was afraid was going to kind of define my career. This is still really weird to like talk about, but that was one of my worries. I was like, people are only going to remember me now as this girl who got like ousted on a media call. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to follow me, and I'm not even going to be able to like go beyond this. This is not going to be the only thing people remember me for. But obviously I feel like that's turned out to not be the case. It's obvious it's still there, but I don't think that that's my legacy now so far in wrestling media.
I mean, I definitely don't think it is. I apologize. I didn't realize. I figured you'd been asked about this before. And so we've got an exclusive here with Ella Talk. I didn't mean to bring up like anything bad about this. But it's definitely like I don't think about that when I think about you. I asked about it because I feel it was something to talk about.
It was something that, honestly, like I said, I was worried that that was going to define me for the rest of my career. And I was like, oh my gosh, nobody's going to want to work with me now. And honestly, like, I kind of shied away from media calls then. I was kind of not traumatized from it, like, just being honest. But I kind of was. I was like, I'm afraid to, like, ask a question now. So I kind of, like, would steer away from some of the future media calls until I felt more comfortable, until recently. But even then, still, like, I kind of had that same feeling. I was like, oh, gosh, like, I gotta tread lightly, because there was so many, like, there was a lot of support, but there was also a good majority of people that were, like I said, coming for me on social media and emails and sending like threats and stuff, which is something I had never dealt with before.
See, all I saw, and I'm sorry you had to go through the threats and everything, because that's just terrible from people, but all I saw was the support, because we follow a lot of mutuals, and all of our mutuals were pretty much like, hey, hope you're okay and everything. And then the way my perspective anyway was like, Tony, what are you doing? Like, don't just knock this off. Like, I felt bad for you that this happened, and I thought Tony looked bad in this, not you. Like, I thought you were just doing your job, you're just asking a question, and Tony was the one who came off bad in this whole thing. And so, yeah, I didn't even think of the perspective of like, oh, this is not good for Ella. I'm just thinking of like, Ella's fine, she's just doing her job. But I'm sorry you went through that, and now I feel bad for you.
It's okay. It's luckily the mute button was a thing. However, I definitely went down the rabbit hole that I shouldn't have, and like Reddit and like searching Twitter mentions. I will say I was very guilty of that, and then finding people making like podcasts and like articles about it. I'll say I was very guilty at that. So it's not something that I try to do anymore, because I've already gone down that rabbit hole and kind of got lost in it, to be honest, in that moment. But it's about a year removed now. I feel like we've patched things up. I've obviously done an AEW interview, one interview since then. I've been invited to have media press passes for them. So, I mean, I guess we're on good terms now, but it's still something I look back and I'm like, oh gosh.
Well, I mean, if it makes you feel any better, like over the last year, especially like really recent, like Tony kind of is kind of, I don't know if it's the right way to, you guys wouldn't know what I mean. Like, he's kind of becoming, it's becoming kind of a pattern of like not being the best when it comes to some of these media interviews and stuff like that. So like, I think it's something where like, it kind of helps your case a little bit too, if that makes sense, where it's like, okay, we've kind of seen like TK might not be the best at handling a lot of this stuff to begin with. Now on the flip side, positive notes, you mentioned some good mentors and friends of yours, like Samira and Alicia too. I remember, man, I think I came across her stuff, Alicia's stuff, when she was doing Ambi. I don't know if she still does that or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember knowing her as like a musician interviewer. And then I started noticing her in wrestling, and I was like, I realized she's like a lot, I shouldn't say, well, she's definitely younger than I am. It was one of those things, she was like accomplishing all this stuff with like all these big musicians and wrestlers and all this. I was like, wow, this is really, really, really impressive. I had no idea someone was doing this. What's it like getting, you know, having people like that to talk to and get feedback from? Because that has to be so huge to just be able to pick people's brains like that, that have that experience that you're kind of trying to, you know, they've had all the success and you want to have success as well, and they're willing to like, you know, let them pick your mind and everything, or let you pick their mind rather.
Yeah. So I found Alicia when she interviewed Chris Jericho the second time. It was 2017. So far before I even started any of this stuff. But yeah, Alicia, I believe, is only 2 years older than me. So like when I started out, it was kind of when I first started watching her, she was about the same age. And so it's cool. And she's one of my like three, like big, like inspirations, and her, and even, I mean, a Fightful's own Denise, yeah. I asked Denise for some advice while I was trying to get my stuff in line and transitioning to full time. And she's one that I look up to a lot. So I was like, thank you. Because Denise, I feel like, is the connoisseur. I feel like Denise is just amazing, and I look up to her a lot. She is obviously big in the spotlight and has worked her butt off the last few, actually for like a while now. And she's definitely one that I also look up to, and Alicia and Chris, and they've all like given me good advice that has still stuck with me. It's kind of surreal that like I get to kind of work with and pick the brain of people that I like look up to and kind of aspire to be like. And so it's just cool to see them progress, and then hopefully one day I can kind of get to a path or reach similar success or, you know, work ethic that they have. So it's cool that I'm able to have access to them, and that I've kind of been kind of not following in their steps, but also accomplished some of the same things that they have.
Who would win a fight between me and Denise Salcedo?
Oh, I remember you asking this. It would definitely be Denise.
I asked Samira, like, could she beat up Denise Salcedo? I don't want to pit people against each other. Now I'm just gonna have everybody beat me up. That's the new bit here. She almost beat me up at my wedding the other day.
No.
We sang Taylor Swift together. It was a grand old time, as you would expect from us two Swifties. But Denise and I are gonna fight at some point, and she's gonna.
You better just be sure you don't get low blowed.
She does. I know she has a mean low blow. She's scrappy. She's very scrappy. Your involvement in Pro Wrestling Illustrated and the PWI, the Women's 500. How did all that come about?
Yeah, so last year the Women's 150. That was a fun time. That was my first time being part of anything with PWI. Getting asked to be part of the ranking committee last year, and then writing a whole interview, interviewed. I chatted with Chelsea Green, Deanna Perrazzo, and Mickey James to write an article on Empower. I was also there and kind of like promoting women's wrestling and how far it's come and how far the history of it was in the NWA. And so last year was really cool being on the committee. I didn't make the committee this year, but I do still have a piece coming out in Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the Women's 150 issue. So that's going to be really fun. But yeah, last year was really cool kind of having like my work recognized, kind of, because women's wrestling, I feel like, is like my brand and my niche. You know, it's not something I intended to come into, but it's something I'm genuinely passionate about. So it was really cool to be invited and to be a voice. And last year was the first 150 issue, because it expanded from 100 to 150. And so that was cool, kind of being brought in as the indie expert, I was told, and being able to lend my voice to all these girls I've chatted with a lot on my own podcast anyways. So that was honestly really fun, and having my voice heard and having some like influence in the decision of some of the girls that I had advocated for, and them being higher up than maybe necessarily they were considering.
And that's for people listening, that's out today, that PWI. So that's October 27th. Sometime after y'all hear this morning, y'all can check that out as well. So yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I said, last year I was on the committee, this year I was not, but I did still write a piece, actually two pieces in this year's issue, so I'm super excited for everyone to see it.
What goes into being on the committee? Because we had Regis Reg on a few weeks ago, and he's part of the 500, and he does the Black Wrestling Excellence 500 as well, and you know, he talked about people get mad about the rankings. Like if you put them one place, they're like in your DMs, and then other people like use those numbers to get like bookings and stuff. Like, are you conscious of these numbers and how people are going to react to, oh man, if I put them at 101 instead of 99, they're going to be mad at me?
Last year, I feel like for me, it was literally my first time ever being on a committee. So I didn't kind of really know what to go into expecting to it, except like I know my girls pretty much. And I feel like we each had a designated, like we had a Japan expert. We had people who were familiar with the indie scene, like WWE, AEW, Impact, like all those little niches within it. For me, I feel like last year I wasn't really, there was a couple of instances where I'm thinking about like, oh, so-and-so is probably going to think that they deserve to be higher, or people are going to be mad that so-and-so like wasn't number one or something like that, or they're mad at who number one is. At the end of the day, people are going to be mad no matter what. We all have our own subjective opinions, so we try to keep it as objective as possible with actual criteria, with like the quality of matches, the cultural impact, their win-loss record, number of championships held. There's literally a whole guideline to the evaluation period and what is it called? The guidelines and the parameters set the criteria of what goes into making this list. So there's some objectiveness to this. Most of it is, but also part of it is subjective, like the cultural impact or like people's influence on other people. And so it's, again, we're just 7 or 8 people going into this who have pro wrestling experience. We're just a small little bubble of wrestling experts. But on the grand scheme of things, just like with anything, people are going to have their own opinions. And no matter what, even like we saw with the 500, people are going to argue no matter what you do. You can't appease everybody.
So speaking kind of to this, specifically with like women's wrestling, I know on this year's list on the PWF 500 and on last year's list, last year Trish Adora was at, I think, 44, and this year she was at 50. I think that's pretty wild. I think it's cool. Obviously, I'm a big fan of independent wrestling and I follow her career, and you know, but it's wild to see somebody, a woman ranked that high on that list to begin with is incredibly impressive, but it's even more impressive to me because she doesn't have really any mainstream visibility. Like, no one knows her from like WWE, AEW, anywhere else. It's like, but she's grinded the indies and just put on this catalog over the last few years. It's been so impressive that she gets ranked that highly. Can you speak any at all to that? Because I know that you pay attention to that being an indie fan, but I know you said like, the committee is going to be all over the place. Some people are going to be mainly WWE, maybe AEW, this or that. How does everyone get on board like to rank Trish Adora so high? Because I think that personally, I agree with it, but I just feel like a lot of people might've seen that and been like, who's Trish Adora? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of wild.
So I can't speak to the 500 list necessarily, but I know that Trish Adora is also one, again, for all the women who ranked on the 500, much like an Alley Catch, a Masha Slamovich, a Billy Starks. A lot of it has to, again, do with the criteria of them competing in open weight divisions. And she, I mean, her, honestly, I think her and Masha and Alley, like, I believe were the three most highest ranked women on the 500 list. They compete against in a lot of open weight divisions against men and stuff like that.
All three of them plus mainly wrestle men, actually.
Which is exactly like kind of what the 500 debate is based on, those open weight divisions or against the men. So I feel like there's always a case for her when it, like you said, a majority of their matches are against men or intergender and stuff like that. And Trish Adora, I mean, she's also wrestled for a couple men's championships too and stuff like that, but she's also at the time I'm trying to think of the evaluation period right now. She had some exposure, obviously, with Ring of Honor and AEW, but I think it's to also her cultural impact herself. Like, she's still the Pan-African diaspora champion. And so for me, she's also had a big cultural impact on the Black community as well. So that is also a part of the 500 list, as well as the cultural impact. And so I feel like it's a combination of her skills. She's held a couple championships. Obviously, like you said, she wrestles against a lot of in the open weight divisions for intergender wrestling. She's definitely had a cultural impact, and I'm sure her win-loss record is pretty good as well, especially on the indies. And so, you know, maybe her name value or stock isn't mainstream, but I feel like she's one who, even if you haven't seen her on TV, I feel like if you're beyond casual, you've at least heard of Trish Adora, I feel like. Unless you're living under a rock. And so I think rightfully so, she deserves to be that high. She's kind of pushing the boundaries for women. And plus two, it makes a statement. If there's anybody that's going to make a statement, it would be Trish Adora.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd imagine, obviously, I know we can't talk about the women's list coming up until it releases, but I'd imagine she's probably ranked pretty high on that, as are the women you just mentioned, Alley Catch, Billy Starks, Jordan Grace. You know, there's so much good talent. Masha Slamovich. I mean, Masha might be my favorite wrestler, period, right now, like anywhere. Like, I love Masha. And I love Jordan, too. I've been glowing about their match at Bound for Glory since
it happened. I was there. I was there in Albany. I was fully convinced. I was like, there's no way Masha's going to lose this. You know, she hasn't lost since Knockouts Knockdown against Deonna Purrazzo. So for like basically a year, she's been undefeated in Impact Wrestling. But those two pulled out all the stops. The crowd was chanting, "You can't beat her," to Jordan. And that fired her up even more, gave Masha all of her best stuff. And honestly, I was left speechless in a good way when Jordan defeated Masha, because it was a good surprise. That was a fantastic matchup, and Impact definitely left it unpredictable for me, because I was literally thoroughly convinced that Masha was walking away with the championship. I was like, there's no way Masha's gonna lose. But that match, Jordynne Grace, this second run is really proving otherwise. And so I'm excited to see where she goes from here.
I completely agree. I've called it before. I think I've said it here on this channel before. I've said it on some other podcasts. I think Jordynne Grace, to me, she'd be my number one candidate to be the one to eventually beat Josh Alexander for the world title. Like, I would just have her keep running with this Knockouts championship. And then, you know, because she's also been in the mix for like the X Division title before and stuff like that. And what I like about the Masha, and I love the whole match, but I like the layer of Masha had it. Like, she hit the snowplow, Jordynne landed too close to the ropes. So there was the visual pin still. So Masha was still protected and there's still meat on the bones. If they want to come back, which they would be very foolish not to come back to that. Like, you got to run that match back because it was so good. So that's cool that you were there live, though, because, I mean, that was, yeah, that's honestly one of those matches I've been telling everybody since it happened. Like, if you're a fan of wrestling, especially if you, for some reason in 2022, still have some sort of reservation about, like, high-level women's wrestling, like, show them that match. Like, you can't tell me that isn't as good as anything else you're going to see all night, so.
Yeah, that match was fantastic. Go on, Jeremy.
Oh, who are some of your favorite wrestlers to watch now or in the past?
I feel like we've named a bunch of them. Like, Deonna Purrazzo is always amazing. I love her. I love saying the virtuosa. I feel like I'm just biased to her. I mean, I have her. I did this backwards. I have her hanging up over here. She's fantastic. Like you said, Masha's great. Billy Starks. It's scary that she's not even, like, reached her full prime yet. Like, she's been on, like, AEW Dark, but she hasn't even reached her prime yet, and she is so good. It's kind of scary, to be honest. But one that I feel like is really underrated, at least on the indie scene, is Sandra Moon. We've seen her wrestle Billy. She's been at it a couple times at GCW. She's a former FSW women's champion. She's kind of like the leader of the subspace division. I feel like she's really coming up. She's based in Las Vegas and around the West Coast. We've seen her travel a little bit over to the East Coast. She's one that I am really, really psyched for and really am invested in. So I think she's gonna take the world by storm. And also Damage Control. I mean, I'm a big fan of all three of those, at least within the women's wrestling landscape. I always love those three. I'm so glad that those three are three I wouldn't have, like, pinged together to be together because they're so amazing all singles. But I love that they're what they've been doing so far.
Last one. Coolest thing in your room.
Ooh.
She might have just pointed at it. She was like, I love this chunk.
She got some cool pictures. Yeah.
You know what?
There.
You're going to make me literally get this off of my wall over here.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
So that was my favorite part when everybody just, like, leaves and it's like, I got to go grab this and then I'll come back with it.
Yes. Look at my stuff.
And this
here.
Thing is huge. Big surprise. By
the way. Oh, okay.
This thing is literally huge. I'm not, you know, I think it's really cool. The design of it is really cool. Like, the artwork is really cool of Liv Morgan. And so I feel like it's Liv Morgan. She's also just really cool herself. Like, it's just, it's like, I don't have anything like it else in my room, like, art wise. And it's, like, the biggest piece that I own. So I would say this, to be honest.
That is very pretty cool. Sweet. Yeah. Cool. That is awesome. Ella, let the people know where they can find you at.
You can find me on Twitter at It's Ella J. If you go to the link tree in my bio, you can find most of my links. I still have to update it a little bit, but you can find all the links there in my link tree there, the easiest way.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us again. Go to at It's Ella J on Twitter. Follow all of her work with all the blank, blank, and blank, and blank websites that she is working for nowadays. I'm very happy that, one, you are in the space, period, and two, that you are now in the space full time. So anybody that can, like, do this for a full-time thing makes me excited because I know there aren't too many of us out there. So it is great to have more full-time people doing this in the wrestling media space. Ella, thank you again for joining us. Guys, we'll be right back here on the...
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.